That's Pepper v. Litton was one where you had a defendant insider that was purporting to create this fraudulent debt so that he acquired company assets at a foreclosure sale and on that debt and then sold the assets to his other company and they made some money. So there, as I noted, there really are a lot, and my materials include a lot of cases where insiders and their counsel do manipulate asset sales in bankruptcy cases. They're almost always hiding their interests. They're hiding critical information, and it gets discovered afterwards. So the DIP insiders who secretly owned a buyer or had a secret interest in a buyer sometimes have a secret interest to get it in and then to resell it at a profit. You have ones where they have a hidden interest in a joint venture agreement with the actual bidder at the sale. You have a professional who's valuing assets below the actual value to the buyer, who's agreed that afterwards they'll get a great deal to this professional by hiring him and him getting involved. And sometimes it's just an acquisition by a third party at a bankruptcy sale where you have then a resale to the insider. So the equity ends up with the assets, even though that would otherwise be prohibited by something like the absolute priority rule. So, okay. Most cases hold that bankruptcy professionals, like the trustees, can't directly or indirectly acquire these assets because of their fiduciary status. There is a split. There is a split of authority on that. Some courts have allowed this. The lead authority that I cited is the Seventh Circuit Shipper case. In Shipper, you had an individual Chapter 11 case, and the individual Chapter 11, and he sold property that he owned, his house, to his parents. And he sold it for $8,000. The parents resold it a year later for $46,000 and kept the profit. And so they got the upside while the creditors were not paid in full. And it turns out upon some investigation by the bank that had a security interest in this property that there had been an offer for this property to the individual debtor for the same $46,000. And it's the one, the entity that bought it from the parents. So suspicion. Well, it turned out that the buyer had backed out for its own reasons from the initial offer to the debtor, and the court looked into it, a lot of litigation, findings of fact, that it was because the bank wouldn't clear up some title issues with the land, so it was actually the bank's fault. But the amount, the actual $8,000 purchase price, was in fact consistent with the bank's appraisal at the time. And what the Seventh Circuit said is that your fiduciary duties as a debtor in possession are to comply with the bankruptcy code. That's what measures your fiduciary duties. You don't have these additional common law duties of a common law fiduciary. So whereas a common law fiduciary might be obliged to go out and inform you about other things, like there was a prior offer for $46,000 that was withdrawn, from the bankruptcy perspective, you have your appraisal, you have your auction, you have your ability for people to come in, you have your notice that goes out to creditors, you have all of the, you step through all of the requirements of the bankruptcy code. And that's what you need to do in order to meet your fiduciary obligations. So at least it says, at least the Seventh Circuit said, in an asset sale context. So it really is important to apply that. You have to disclose what the code, what the rules require. And as I said, cases that allow an insider to purchase are ones where you do have full compliance with all that. It's fully disclosed, and you have an individual or a disinterested party involved in making that analysis, a disinterested investment banker, for example, where one of the insiders is going to be allowed to be a bidder at the sale, so that the insider is not the one that's having some control over what information is available to the third-party bidders and what is not. Because when you have that kind of control, those are the cases in the materials that say you have a violation of duties. I I do want to note there, as I enjoyed listening to John Patow talk about fiduciary duties, I have a very long article, over 80 pages, in an ABI law review at one point in time that is talking about fiduciary duties in the Chapter 11 context for creditors, committees, and for debtors in possession, and for both of their counsel. That goes into some of this that might be helpful if you ever have to deal with those kinds of things.